This is the podcast from JNS Pediatrics. Welcome to the October 31st, 2014 podcast from Journal of Neurosurgery Pediatrics. My name is Natalie Pincham, and I will be reading synopses of some of the articles published today. The topics covered in this week's podcast are vascular disorders, epilepsy, oncology, hydrocephalus, and surgical technique. Sinus pericrani, diagnosis and management in 21 pediatric patients. A clinical article by Marco Pavanello and colleagues. Sinus pericrani, or SP, is a rare venous anomaly that abnormally connects the intracranial dural sinuses to the epicranial veins. In this paper, the authors aimed to clarify this entity and suggest a diagnostic therapeutic flowchart. Therefore, they retrospectively reviewed the clinical charts and neuroimages of 21 patients with SP. All the patients underwent brain MRI, MR venography, and craniocerebral CT. Diagnostic DSA was performed in 19 patients. SPs were categorized as dominant, draining the majority of intracranial venous outflow, or accessory, draining only a minority of the intracranial venous outflow. There were 5 dominant and 14 accessory SPs. The dominant SPs were not treated. Among the accessory SPs, 4 patients were not treated, 2 underwent surgical ligature, and 8 were treated endovascularly. The authors observed no complications and symptoms disappeared after treatment in each case. In conclusion, accepted guidelines and recommendations are still lacking. The authors define a diagnostic therapeutic flowchart in which angiography plays a crucial role in the classification of SP and choice of optimal treatment. An accessory SP is amenable to treatment, whereas a dominant SP must be preserved because it constitutes the major cerebral venous outlet. The endovascular approach is becoming increasingly relevant and has proven to be safe and effective. Microsurgical treatment of arteriovenous malformations in pediatric patients. The Boston Children's Hospital Experience. A clinical article by Bradley Gross and co-authors. The authors undertook a retrospective review of departmental and hospital databases to retrieve the medical data from all patients up to 18 years of age who were diagnosed with cerebral arteriovenous malformations, or AVMs. Of 117 children with cerebral AVMs, 94 underwent microsurgical resection. 20 of these patients underwent adjunctive preoperative embolization. The overall postoperative angiographically confirmed obliteration rate was 94%. As part of a new protocol, the last 50 patients in this series underwent immediate perioperative angiography, significantly improving the obliteration rate from 86% to 100%. No other factors, such as hemorrhagic presentation, AVM size, location in the brain, drainage, or Spetzler-Martin grade, had a statistically significant impact on the obliteration rate. Perioperative neurologic deficits occurred in 17% of patients, but the vast majority of these deficits, or 77%, were predictable visual field cuts. Hemorrhagic presentation and AVM location in non-eloquent regions were each associated with lower rates of postoperative neurological complications. 94% of the children had good functional outcomes, as judged by scores on the modified Rankin scale, ranging from 0 to 2, with outcomes being significantly influenced by the functional scores before surgery. Review of 1 and 5-year follow-up data indicated an overall annual 0.3% re-bleed rate and 0.9% recurrence rate. Design and evaluation of a new synthetic brain simulator for endoscopic third ventriculostomy, a clinical article by Gerben Iser Breimer and co-workers. Many surgical specialties are moving to simulation-based training for at least part of their curriculum. This is to allow residents to learn and practice an upcoming procedure in a safe and risk-free environment, and also deal with the constraints imposed by decreased working hours and surgery volumes, and the emphasis on patient safety. Endoscopic third ventriculostomy is a common procedure done in both pediatric and adult patients, but is technically very demanding. It carries significant risk and is challenging to teach. The endoscopic instruments are unfamiliar, and unlike other endoscopic procedures, the operation is done within the cerebrospinal fluid or underwater so that any bleeding immediately obscures the field. The authors have developed a realistic brain and skull phantom made of silicon using three-dimensional printing technology that replicates a patient with obstructive hydrocephalus and upon which an endoscopic third ventriculostomy can be repeatedly performed. The simulator uses standard endoscopic tools. It is done underwater and has bleeding scenarios. Residents and faculty who evaluated the simulator found it to be an excellent teaching tool. Ongoing evaluation of the model in terms of its teaching effectiveness are underway, and additional models of other intraventricular endoscopic procedures are under development. Long-term outcomes of resective epilepsy surgery after invasive pre-surgical evaluation in children with tuberous sclerosis complex and bilateral multiple lesions. A clinical article by Ravindra Arya and colleagues. Tuberous sclerosis complex is a genetic disease with a high incidence of drug-resistant epilepsy. Traditionally, patients with this condition have been considered poor candidates for epilepsy surgery due to the multifocal nature of the disease process. The authors present the largest single-center experience with resective epilepsy surgery in children with tuberous sclerosis complex having bilateral multiple lesions. The authors' surgical decision-making was driven by comprehensive, multimodal, non-invasive and invasive pre-surgical workup. After an average follow-up of more than 5 years, more than half of the patients were completely seizure-free, and nearly 85% experienced meaningful decrease in their seizure frequency. Although limited by small numbers, the authors found seizure freedom to be associated with improvement in intelligent quotient in these children. Even in patients who were not seizure-free, they found a significant decrease in the number of anti-epileptic drugs and an improvement in electroencephalography findings after surgery. The authors believe that this study will contribute toward wider acceptance of resective surgery for such children. They also hope that in the future, creation of a multi-center database and use of identical definitions and outcome measures will improve pre-surgical evaluation and optimize surgical decision-making for children with tuberous sclerosis complex and drug-resistant epilepsy. Targeted intra-arterial anti-VEGF therapy for medically refractory radiation necrosis in the brain. A case report by Shervin Dashti and co-workers. The authors describe the cases of two pediatric patients in whom highly symptomatic radiation necrosis developed in the brain after stereotactic radiosurgery for cerebral arteriovenous malformations. In both cases, the radiation necrosis was refractory to all accepted medical therapies. The children were steroid-dependent for a prolonged period and had developed severe Cushingoid features. Both had a significant decline in quality of life, suffering severe headaches and needing to withdraw from school. Following osmotic blood-brain barrier breakdown, the authors administered a single, low dose of 2.5 milligrams per kilogram of bevacizumab intra-arterially. Both patients had remarkable clinical and radiographic improvements that persisted 8.5 months later. Bevacizumab is an antivascular endothelial growth factor monoclonal antibody that has been shown to be effective as intravenous therapy against radiation necrosis. It is, however, associated with serious side effects, including sinus thrombosis, pulmonary embolus, gastrointestinal tract perforation, wound dehiscence, and severe hypertension. Furthermore, large molecular weight monoclonal antibodies, such as bevacizumab, do not readily penetrate the blood-brain barrier. Intra-arterial delivery of bevacizumab after blood-brain barrier breakdown offers several possible advantages over intravenous delivery, such as a higher concentration of drug delivery to the targeted brain tissue, decreased systemic toxicity because the dose of bevacizumab used is much smaller, and a significantly lower cost. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org.